On behalf of the Association of Gastrointestinal Motility Disorders, or AGMD as we're known, I would like to welcome you to our very first gastroparesis telephone internet community support group meeting. For those who don't know me, my name is Mary Angela DeGrazia DiTucci, and I'm a long-time patient who suffers from chronic idiopathic intestinal pseudobstruction and gastroparesis, which over the years has progressed to include my entire digestive tract, bladder, and resulted in a host of other non-digestive diseases. In 1991, I was so very privileged to have started the Association of Gastrointestinal Motility Disorders, which is a nonprofit international organization which provides support, education, awareness, and advocacy, and promotes further research in this very specialized area of gastroenterology. I hear someone who has some background going on, so can you just be aware that if you are on a telephone, that all of your background is going to be picked up by us? So if you all of a sudden hear something come on that says you're muted, it's because it may be your telephone or your computer with your headset that's causing some sort of a interference with us. And then if you hear that, you can just adjust your whatever your devices. I would also like to take this opportunity to introduce Laura Schmidt. Laura is a longtime longtime volunteer for AGMG. She is serving as a co-administrator, volunteer in training today for our program. She is a patient with gastroparesis, Barrett syndrome, neuropathy, and diabetes. And Laura has a neurogastric stimulator implanted and brings so much insight into living with gastroparesis, as well as her experiences living with that neurogastric stimulator that she has. During this program, I encourage you to share your input, your questions, concerns, suggestions, and experiences as they relate to living with gastroparesis. We do want to make sure that anyone who would like to join in the conversation has the opportunity to do so. So we ask that everyone be certain not to monopolize the conversation, especially where we only have 1 hour of talk and so many people are at this meeting. We also ask that you be mindful of other people's privacy, so please do not share your contact information with anyone during this program or request any contact information from others. If you're interested in contacting somebody else, you can do it through either a call or emailing me, and I will be able to ask that other party if they're interested in doing so as well. And lastly, please state your first name or an alias name if you prefer not to use your first name. If you find it difficulty joining in the conversation, just call out either my name, which is Mary Angela, or you can call out Laura's name, and we will be certain to facilitate you into the conversation. Laura, with that, I'm going to give the reins to you, and you can tell everybody a little bit more about yourself.
Okay. Well, hello, everybody. As Mary Angela said, I am a type 1 diabetic. I have been for 36 years. I developed gastroparesis 13 years ago, or was diagnosed with it. There were many signs previous, but no one knew. In the course of having gastroparesis, I have Barrett's esophagus, and my gastroparesis is caused by neuropathy, which has now spread through my intestines, my bladder, all the inside instead of the outside. but it's been a long journey, and I'm sure every single person here has their own story, and they're probably all different. Because what I have found is nothing works for everybody. Everybody has a different type of regimen that helps them. I do have the neurostimulator. I was actually part of the original FDA study with the doctor that helped Medtronic make the stimulator. And for the 9 years or so that I had it, it didn't work that great, but it helped take a little edge off. And then they had said the batteries were going to die, so you have to replace it. Well, I replaced it thinking and hoping that, you know, 10 years later they'd have a better one, and I can't tell you the difference. They put it in, they turned it up. I used to be in the hospital every single month at least. I have not been in the hospital since, knock on wood, December of 2012, since they put this pacer, this new one in and turned it up a little. Basically, all it does is prevent the feeling of nausea. It actually has electrodes that hook to the nerve that tells your brain to be nauseous, sends electric shocks to it to confuse your brain so you don't feel nauseous. You still feel everything else, but not nauseous. Does anybody else happen to have a neurostimulator on here?
No.
No?
No.
Okay, well, if nobody has one there, then if somebody would like to let us know what brings you here today, let her rip. Just please put out your name first so we know who's talking.
I'll be back to you guys. Something's wrong with this crazy phone. I'll be back.
Okay.
So I was wondering, Laura, too, I was wondering if there's anybody who is interested or perhaps has even has that projected as a potential for their treatment of gastroparesis.
That's true. Is anybody out there looking into it or thinking about it?
I had thought about it. This is Karen, but I had heard that the success was not good. That people, it wasn't helping people.
Now, are you a diabetic?
No, I'm not a diabetic. I have gastroparesis and CIP.
Because they have found and I have no clue what the actual reasoning is, but the neurological stimulators do help diabetics more often than idiopathic, as they call it.
Yeah.
But nowadays, there's a huge advantage that you can do to see if it's going to work before they put it in your body. They didn't have this when I started, so I had, like, you know, my whole chest was cut open. It was a big deal. Now they get one, and all they do is cut maybe a 1 or 2 stitch slice, like up in your chest a little bit, to put the electrodes on the nerve. And then you just wear the pacer. They have one, you know, like on a belt or something, or in a pocket, for a week or so. And if it helps you, then they'll implant it permanently, you know, good. And if it doesn't, then you know it didn't work, and it's not a big surgery you had to go through and hospital time and all that. So that is a new way for people to test it,
uh-huh.
See if it works. And again, with my experience now, saved my life pretty much, really has helped. I mean, it didn't take away everything, but it took away the uncontrollable vomiting that I couldn't stop and always brought me to the hospital. I can do it at home now, be sick in bed, you know, and not have to go out for extra help, which is huge.
Yeah.
Because I've been paying, you know, been in the hospital over 500 times in the last 10 years, and that's a low estimate.
Yeah, I believe that.
Yeah, from being a diabetic, it just kills you, you know. It just wipes out everything else.
I have a daughter that's a type 1.
Type 1,
I have
yeah.
a daughter that's type 1, and she has idiopathic gastroparesis. And so,
well, maybe that's the pace is something she might want to try.
Right.
You know, like I said, you find the doctor and it's a trial, not a implant permanent.
Yes.
Type thing. And when they are implanted, they're really not that big. They're the size of like a really, really small cell phone, like the old teeny ones.
Oh, okay.
It's not much bigger than that. So, and it just goes into a pocket on the inside of your abdomen wall of skin.
Okay.
I've never had it bother me. It's been great. You don't feel it, you know, unless you run it into part of your stomach into a table. But other than that, you're fine with them. And they really do help. Because as everybody, I'm sure, knows, get rid of some of the nausea and you're doing a whole lot better. Just because you're always nauseous. So do we have any other diabetics out here?
Well, Laura, what I was thinking as you were talking about that, how there are two things that always are brought up with the gastroparesis, patients or family members, and one is actually three. And if I keep on talking, I'm going to keep on adding to the list. But the first one is, what do you eat? And the second thing would be, what do you do with the belly distension? And then the third one would be that so many people with gastroparesis may not necessarily look ill. And I'm wondering if there's anybody out there who would like to speak about their experience about that or have any questions about any of those. No, I know a lot of people with gastroparesis. The first question you say is, well, what am I supposed to eat? Because there really isn't, as Laura has said, it's very individual in nature. So what works for one may not necessarily work for others. I know some people are able to eat nearly anything. And then there are others who, of course, you eat the mini meals. I call it grazing, like a cow. But that's how you eat, is just little mini meals in order to be able to digest it instead of plowing through three big meals and then having it sit there even longer. So that's one thing. And also gassy foods can certainly exacerbate the problem. So that's another thing. And avoiding fatty foods, because they're in itself very difficult to digest, even for healthy people. So a lot of people can juice things. Some people can't. Some people eat baby food. But what's very interesting is I've talked to some of the researchers is they're thinking that the majority of people who have gastroparesis have that only when they're eating solid foods, and very few have it with liquids. I have both, but now they're finding that some of the population of gastroparetic patients only have the liquid and not the just solid food. So
I am back. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Welcome back. Enough. So that's a very interesting thing that they're doing some more research on. But I am wondering if anybody here has had difficulty with both liquids and solids, or just liquids.
I can do both, but I bloat really bad in the evenings is my bloating time. And then you were talking about people that, like, I still look good. People will say, you look so good to be so sick.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's good in one way, but sometimes the way you feel, I'm glad I look good, but I feel horrible.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, you know, I'm one that does look healthy, but I'm not.
Yeah.
That's a frustration for so many, and Laura can attest to this too, because you want to have some normalcy in your life, and you want to look normal, but at the same time, you want qualification of all of your stuff to understand what you have to begin with. And then here you are looking good. And we did this whole in our Let's Talk series that we have each month, except this month we didn't have it. But we did this whole program last month on but you look so good, and that's going to be repeated again because the registration was off the wall with that, and it's a topic that is dear to just about everybody's heart. And here you try to look as good as you can, and whether it's at the doctor's office or, you know, anytime you go out, even though it seems like on the days that you feel your worst is the days that people always have a tendency to say, oh, you look good. And, you know, it's especially when you're beginning your journey, it can really hurt even more. But some people struggle with that all the time.
I have a question.
Yes, say your first name so people don't.
This is this is enough.
Yes, enough.
And with the gastroparesis, is it normal? Because I'm extremely bloated with it, and you know, mom will say, "You're so bloated. Why are you so bloated?" Is that normal with the gastroparesis because things aren't moving the way that?
Absolutely, and
okay.
It is very, very normal. Most gastroparesis, not all of us, but most of us have a bloating problem.
Because
where we fill up, and I mean, I literally go from being a little girl to looking like I'm pregnant. No, not a little girl, but I'm fairly small, and I bloat up like three shirt sizes. And you know, it's very uncomfortable, and it is not, as far as I know, they do not know exactly why we bloat in general. Some people have specific reasons that they do. In my case, it's because I have neuropathy in my intestines and things. So once food gets in there, sometimes it stops. And it starts producing gas, and nothing's moving, but it's in my intestines, so I can't burp, fart, do anything to get rid of it. And then when it kicks on again, it'll go through.
Well, I have reduced peristalsis because of the cerebral palsy, and I'm wondering if that has something to do with it, you know, because we'll go out like somewhere and people will say, "Mom will say, oh, you're so bloated. Why are you so bloated? Are you gaining so much weight? And I don't seem to eat too much, and I still am having the vomiting at least once or twice a day." What do you do for the? Is there medicine for the bloating, or what do they?
No, I don't have. There's nothing that I have. I know people do use. I was recommended by my doctors. If it's in your stomach, Gas-X, a couple of those type things can help you. It doesn't help me because I know mine's in my intestines. But if it's in your stomach, you can try. I think it's Gas-X or. And they have a couple of those out that can help your stomach bloating. But it's very, very common in gastroparesis. And you know, we have even on our website, the belly page, because we all go from regular to pregnant, male or female, in a day. You know, we can look that way.
Yeah, I attribute it to, an example I always use is, it's like a balloon. If you keep on filling up that balloon, what happens? It expands. And unless you release that balloon, it's still going to expand, and it's going to remain expanded until finally you release it, and then all of that comes out. With all of us, we have problems with that. I joke around now, and I just say, well, you know, at least I'm getting more than my money's worth on food, because really stays in your gut. But on a serious note, when you take different medications, if you are taking them orally, it can be a problem, because I don't know if any of you have found this, and I'm sure Laura has, that some of the medicines don't work efficiently or effectively because they remain in the stomach. So for normal people, it's expected that there's a time when it reaches its peak, and then the medication will wane off. But a lot of us with motility problems, our peaks and our level of effectiveness of it is as it's impaired as our motility. And I was told also that sometimes the reason why people get sensitivity and allergies to certain meds is for that very reason, that it sits there, and a drug as it was designed to do cannot work the way it should. And when it's sitting there, and then you're adding another one and another one, it's operation overload, if you want to say it that way. So it's very, very challenging, to have that.
This is Laura again. I just wanted to throw in a little piece on that. When I got my pacer put in back in 2003, the original, because they didn't know what was going to happen, they also put in a J-tube. just a J, under my stomach. And I have consistently since then taken, if it's a white pill without a coating, you crush it up and I put it through my tube. That way it gets absorbed in the intestines and doesn't get stuck in the stomach. Because there's nothing worse than taking a bunch of pills and not knowing they don't work for like 2 days, and then the next day they all hit you and you're wiped because you took nausea pills and, you know, everything else, and now they're all hitting at once. At least this way, you know, within a half an hour, I can feel it gets absorbed. I'm not saying run out and get a tube, you know, if unless you wanted one, but it just made more sense for me, because how do you take a nausea pill? What do you do with it? Take it and throw it up if you're sick, right? So this was a very good thing that they did for me. I didn't know they were going to do it. They did it while I was out cold. And I have to have it changed every 3 months, but it's really not a big deal, and it takes them 10 minutes, and that's another
Laura,
thing that
I don't
really
know.
Helped me.
Excuse me, I don't know if everybody on the line or on this call knows what a J-tube is. Can you just explain briefly what it is?
Sure. A J-tube actually goes into your duodenum, which is the little area from your stomach and the beginning of your small intestine, pretty much right there. So my stomach would release things and maybe a half an inch or an inch down into the intestine, I have a tube through my stomach with a hole, and now it's almost like a pierced earring hole. It doesn't get sore or anything, because I've had it for years. And the tube, you know, they just come in, they put the tube, pull a wire in it, pull the tube off, put a new tube on. It's simple like that. But that I can bypass my stomach for anything. I use it for meds, but if I can't eat, I can anything that'll go through the tube, I can put in there. And my body will get the nutrients and everything, but not through my stomach. Just like if I do get sick, a lot of vomiting, being a diabetic, you dehydrate immediately. And my husband helps me when I'm really sick, keep putting water into that, because it keeps your body hydrated too. It's very helpful for me. I know some people have like a GJ tube, they call it, which is right on the border, or like the hole. And some people have G tubes, which are just gastric for stomach, where they have like a buttonhole where they can release pressure. That's what that's for. Those are for. And then you move on to the TPNs and, you know, feeding stuff. But the J tube is just, you know, it definitely has been a help. And in many ways, in a lot of ways, I had to learn myself that it could be a help. But, it's, you know, it's definitely something to think about if your doctors are talking about it. It's an easy way to get the medications down.
Now, what's also interesting, and, you know, I'd be interested in hearing from others, is how many people with gastroparesis have diabetes or have, for example, pseudo obstruction, where you developed gastroparesis or something else. There's a secondary cause to it, like a disease, for example, multiple sclerosis may cause that. Or if it's idiopathic, it just came about on its own. And the other thing would be is how many of you with gastroparesis has had it progress or has had it remain pretty much just with the stomach being affected? Anybody?
I had it, or I have it with CIP, and whenever
they... Say your first name, so...
And they, whenever they do the test, it's always worse. So... my gastroparesis it's getting worse, and as the disease progresses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not surprised. Not surprised at all. Is that Inam?
Yeah.
Yes, Inam.
With me, the gastroparesis, it affects stomach, abdomen, colon, rectum, is slow, you know, doesn't work. So basically everything except the esophagus. I'm grateful the esophagus is still okay. Is affected with the last time they did the test. It takes a week or so or more for food to go through, and so abdomen is slow, colon is slow, stomach, you know, and rectum.
Edom, do you think any of your other conditions helped cause this?
Help
bring on the gastroparesis?
Well, I think the cerebral palsy, it could have had something to do with it.
Okay, that sounds like it might make sense. Not that I would know about that, but sounds like something. Is there anybody else out there
I'd
like to talk?
Yeah, Loretta. I have lupus, but it's in remission right now. So I don't know what caused the gastroparesis. I'm in the beginning stages of it. I don't have the nausea, but, you know, I had the test for it. That's how I found out. And I get bloated and I get those symptoms that you sound, you know, is this going to progress to something over time? Does it come on? Does it get worse very fast? I don't know. I've had it for about a year.
Loretta, those are all very, very good questions. And the answer that both Laura and I think would be in communion with is that there are no definitive answers. People with all of these different types of motility, but I'm going to focus on the gastroparesis, they may go for years and, you know, be able to deal with it fine and it doesn't get worse. In some patients, it does progressively get worse. There are too many ifs in that whole topic because it depends on if you have a secondary illness. It depends on your particular body because everyone is different. But we have some patients that are really very, very functional with it. And then you have other patients who are totally debilitated. Some patients actually, and this is another interesting thing that I don't know if all of you know, some of you may not. The interesting fact is that not all patients with gastroparesis get nauseous, and not all patients get vomiting, even though their stomach is working very slowly, and not all patients get distended. So when you look at the signs, classic signs of gastroparesis, you may say, well, I can't possibly have that because I don't fit into that category. Motility is still pioneer territory in the medical community. And the digestive tract is such a complex system. It's an amazing system, but it's so complex. And it is governed by so many systems within the human body, from hormonal to the autonomic, all of these different things. And as a result of that, it's not as easy as one would think. And the good news is that they're doing a lot of research on this now, and certainly those patients with gastroparesis should really have a lot of hope because our organization gets privy to a lot of the different potential research that's going on. And when we see that, especially those with diabetes and gastroparesis, the research is really coming to the foreground. And once they're finding more and more patients with gastroparesis, it stimulates the research. Because then they say, it's profitable on our part as well as helping patients. So just because you don't fit into that slot of, maybe I do look ill, or maybe my belly isn't swollen, maybe I can eat everything. Another issue is that it's so unpredictable in nature. So a lot of patients with gastroparesis, as well as some of the other motility diseases and disorders, may find that one day they can eat a particular food and you know, be okay with it. And then all of a sudden, another day, they can eat the exact same thing, the exact same quantity, and boom, it's just sitting there even longer.
Yeah, that's very frustrating
for patients.
And, because I also have a deformed, I was born with it, the bowel pushed over way to the left, and they're twisted together, so that gives me bacterial overgrowth. So the food's not digested, and it gets into that tract, and then so I have to be on antibiotics. It's not a big deal. I mean, I'll do what I have to do. But boy, I'll tell you, I miss eating the Italian food.
I understand.
Oh my God, that's so mean. You know?
Yeah, it's so hard to be able. You know, when you hear people and they say they're going on a diet, or you know, I have a restrictive diet, but when you have something like this, and you hear me say this at probably every presentation or every support group, that all of us, families as well as patients, go through a period of mourning, an extended period of mourning, a perpetual period of mourning. You are mourning the loss of your healthy life. You are mourning the loss of your ability to enjoy food, have the confidence of eating, and not worry about, oh, you know, I can eat that, I'm hungry. You're mourning the loss of your ability to be comfortable going in social situations or traveling without that fear, oh my God, what's going to happen? What's this? What's that? And there are so many if onlys that go into every decision you make. And what if people don't understand? What if the doctor doesn't understand? What if I have to go to emergency and they don't understand? So you're mourning all of these things in your life, perhaps your finances, perhaps your career, perhaps relationships on top of all of that. There are so many components that go into just the word gastroparesis that the emotional roller coaster is huge. And as you are mourning these losses and you're struggling with, but I don't want to give that up. I'm not ready to give that up. And then you may reach the point where, okay, I get it. I accept it. And then all of a sudden you'll smell a food, or somebody will make a comment, or there's just something from your past that crops up. And then, boom, you have to go through that whole mourning process again. And another way of going through that process is, one day when you're feeling fairly well because you're now getting used to this, and then, boom, without warning, it becomes exacerbated. That exacerbation will trigger that whole anxiety mourning process again. So unlike other diseases where you finally learn to accept it, with this, because it revolves around food, the livelihood of life, it revolves around social activities, your well-being. There are too many parts that are affected by this, and thus the perpetual mourning that I have found in my life, and I'm sure so many others have. So if you are experiencing that, or you're at a point where you're depressed, first of all, it's important to have support and get help. If you are in that depression, don't be ashamed or be proud to think that you're going to handle this on your own. It takes a greater person to be able to say, I need help, and recognize it and get professional help. But along with that, we have found that those who have more family support or friends that support it, have a team of doctors who you can work with, have faith, have whatever you believe in. Those of us with a little bit more of a, well, I can relate to Loretta, and perhaps that's the Italian stubbornness, but that ability to plow through things and not give up fare much better than those who don't have those things in place, because it's a very, very challenging life to live.
It's your attitude, you know.
It is. Yeah. It is. But it we'd all be kidding ourselves if we said that our attitude was right on target every single day.
Yeah.
I know.
And I don't find people to have, I don't tell too many people. I'd rather not, because some people just don't have the compassion. And if you're not thin, they really don't. They don't want to, you know, because I lost a lot of weight in the beginning. And it's amazing how many people judge you, you know, oh, you look so great. Well, I'm starving.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. I said, I'm sorry, but I'm hungry, you know, and I, you know, this outward look, it's bad. And then when you get the bloated look, oh, my God. You know, it's not, you know, in the culture, you need to go around with pamphlets to educate people. It's not nice to look at someone and judge, you know, just because they're bloated and heavy or thin. Or, you know, it's the way the culture is, you know. But I'd rather eat junk
garbage. I don't blame you. I know that with a lot of the motility problems, and somebody is having a fax in the background, so if you could just kind of turn that off. But what I notice is what I've told so many people, because I get, you know, sobbing people on the line all the time or emails, and they're so frustrated because, yes, there are some of us who look are emaciated or are some that are underweight, but certainly not emaciated. And then there are others who are of average weight. And there are some people who are a little bit heavy. And then there are people who are obese who are affected by this. So you're right in saying that you can't judge by the weight. The scale can give certain indicators, but the scale is not a total indicator of how you are feeling and what you are going through. And that's important to know, because people say, oh, you know, I have this, I'm not eating, I should be as thin as a rail, but why isn't this happening?
Why?
That's a great question. And that's what doctors are still trying to investigate. And some of them say that it has something to do with the metabolism. Your body learns to work very efficiently with what you consume. So if you are consuming less food, your body is still on that other track of eating a lot, and something is awry in the metabolism. There is no definitive answer on that yet.
I just wondered, because I got very, very anemic.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to figure out what's going on there, but they're going to do a colonoscopy and an endoscopy, but I don't know if it has anything to do with the absorption of the food. Mm-hmm. It's not getting in right. I don't know if it has anything to do with that.
It could very well be. A lot of the absorption takes place in that small intestine. So it could very well be. Another thing of note, that many patients with gastroparesis also, as a result of having that food sit there for a while, end up having esophageal problems. It doesn't happen in every case, so don't say because I'm saying this that this is going to happen to you.
But it does.
If something isn't emptying, sometimes it can all of a sudden you say, you know, occasionally I'm getting a little bit of heartburn, or, you know, I can feel the food go back up once in a while.
Oh, yeah, it does come up. Yeah, you're right. It does come up. You're right. Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's reflux. That's reflux. But sometimes when you go to bend down, or you are lying down, or you do a little exercise or something, all of a sudden, or even when you're in the bathroom, if it's raining, all of a sudden you're saying, what the heck is that? And it could just be a burning. And when I say just, I'm not just using that lightly, because it's not. I'm not belittling your symptoms. But it could be that reflux coming up, and some people don't feel pain, but they can just feel the food going up. And some people actually have reflux and they don't even realize it. That's called NERD. They have it, and they're not really getting the symptoms, and then all of a sudden they find out, whoa, there's all stuff going on down there. And with the esophagus, because the lower esophageal sphincter by the stomach there, the contents of the stomach is going to, and the pressure is going to push all of that back up. Doesn't happen to everybody, but if you start getting those symptoms, bring the attention to your doctor to say, you know, I'm either periodically getting this, or it's becoming more frequent, or is this something I should be concerned about?
And I wanted to talk about that a little bit.
Oh my gosh.
From that a lot. And
I'm sorry, who's this?
This is Susan.
Susan, okay.
Yeah, and I get the acid reflux a lot, and even if I keep meals or grazing, whatever you want to call that, small amounts, it could be just a few saltines, and I can get really severe heartburn that lasts forever. And I was taking, like, bottles of Maalox, like, way more than I should have, and I was getting concerns because the pain was so severe. Nothing was working, but I knew I was taking way too much. So I went online, and I started looking up what other people did, and some people said they took some vinegar. I've been taking pickle juice is what I've been using, and I actually find in small amounts it helps some of the time. I was just wondering.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's apple cider vinegar is what they said, but that's pretty harsh. So I thought pickle juice, it's sweet, I think it's like bread and butter pickled juice. It's a little sweet, so I can tolerate it. And I'm not taking, I actually haven't been taking the Maalox at all. I went from taking bottles of that to doing this. And it does help. And at nighttime, I have the bed up on stilts and on risers, and I have a wedge. But even with that, sometimes when I happen to have maybe a bigger meal, well, for what my stomach thinks is a bigger meal at night, I'll be up sick all night, feeling severely nauseous, turning, and I literally have to kind of sleep, if I can even sleep, sitting up. I do this nights over and over, and I was just wondering, does anybody else get that bad that they can't even lay down, even on an incline? I literally have to be, like, sitting upright.
Yes, absolutely, I know, absolutely, in my case.
Yeah, me too.
Laura, do you have that problem?
Oh, yeah.
Any
I sleep
anybody
with
else?
Four pillows.
Yeah.
I
anybody
do.
Else?
I have a craftmatic bed that raises the head up.
It's helpful. I've been actually thinking about doing that because I don't know what else to do because it's awful.
That really helps me is because I can adjust it the way I want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, it really, I know I have the sleep number that we just got, and it really does make a good difference. However, if you are a person who is a flat sleeper, you're still going to end up with that reflux, but at least you're when your head is raised, it's so helpful. It really is. And also, not eating close to the time that you go to bed. We are going to be having one of these groups, support groups, telephone internet support groups, geared specifically for esophagus within the coming months. And that goes for anybody who has reflux, who has a laser, who has esophageal spasms, nutcracker, the whole ball of wax there. So that will be upcoming. But so many of these motility diseases are kind of connected with each other. Like those with gastroparesis may have that. Interesting, I have heard people who have said that the vinegar helps, which in my mind says, well, how can that be because it's so acidic in there? And some people have even used lemon with water, all of these things. Again, it's individual. I've never heard pickle juice. That's a new one for me. But the timing
vinegar.
Of when – pardon me?
I said the pickle juice is vinegar, but it's just not –
But it has other things in it, yeah. So it's – very interesting. I know a lot of people, if you take Rolaids or you take Tums, you need to be careful of that. Not only does it have magnesium in it, which, you know, it's an electrolyte that's important for your body, but it can't get off balance. And also, what often can happen with these is you begin to take them and they'll work for a little bit and then you have to take more. And about 20 minutes later, you have to take more. And then instead of it helping you, it has a rebound effect. So your reflux becomes more frequent and more intense.
I think so, that happened to me with the Maalox because I was using tablespoons, and I was taking up to a half a bottle at night, maybe more, because I desperately just kept taking more because it it just wouldn't go away, or if it did, it was temporary, which, again, led me to the pickle dew. But in the hospital.
Yeah. And so many patients end up doing research on the internet or trying to find the best solution that's going to help them. With gastroparesis, I just want to make a note for those of you who have gastroparesis and also have the nausea. There have been studies, and regular doctors who are trained in acupuncture have found that sometimes the acupuncture as well as the magnetic therapy on the ear, where they attach different magnets to certain parts of your ear, as well as different forms of acupuncture, because there are so many forms, as I learned through my own experience, that can be helpful to many patients. So if you're open to some alternatives, that may be something to consider. Another thing is massaging the back can help sometimes as well, especially if you are getting pain in the stomach area or your abdomen or even your esophagus. If you can get somebody to kind of help massaging rather deeply into your back, some people find that can at least relieve some of the spasm or help with some of the problems, the symptoms that you get. I don't know if anybody here has tried any alternative therapy with the gastroparesis. No.
Anyone, acupuncture, anything?
Hi, Darcy.
Hi, Darcy.
Yeah. Hi. I never have had any stomach or abdomen pain. All my pain is very bad back pain. Do you think this acupuncture and these things you mentioned would help with that?
I would say that.
I also get the nausea, by the way, very bad nausea.
Yeah, it's something to explore because it's very individual in nature. When I had acupuncture, my body, and I've had all different forms by neurologists even and those who teach acupuncture at one of the schools here, my body, unfortunately, does not respond gracefully with acupuncture. However, that being said, that does not deter me from recommending it for other people to explore, because I have heard from others, as well as reading the literature from those who are practicing the acupuncture, even doing it at, I think they do it at Mass Gen, that they have found a lot of success with it in certain patients. So certainly something that you might want to consider. If your doctor is open to having you try them, that's great. If you want to discuss it with your doctor or go to this is an association of complementary medicine, I think. But there is a way to find a qualified acupuncturist or a homeopathic doctor. Keep in mind, though, what works for one may not work for the other, but it certainly can potentially help with pain, whether it's in the back or whether it's in your gut, and any nausea or vomiting symptoms that you may have, or any of the other symptoms, even bloating, it may help with that.
Okay. Now, I have another question about the nausea. First of all, I never, ever had any bloating, and since I've had this, I've never, ever had any vomiting. But now, I have not had any appetite at all for the last 3 weeks. I'm lucky if I eat a bowl of chips or a piece of chicken once a day. Now, if I do not eat all day long, why do I keep getting these episodes of severe nausea if I don't eat?
Another good question. So I can only, I'm not a doctor or nurse,
right.
So I can't give you that medical approach, but I can relate to my own experience, where I don't recommend this for anybody, so please don't do as I do. But I only eat one meal a day, and I eat pretty much the same thing every day.
Uh-huh.
And I don't have any hunger. I am doing it because part of my job of living is to eat because I know I have to.
Same here.
Some people are on tubal feedings, and that works tremendously for them. I have opted not to up to this point. However, it is work to eat, and that feeling that you're getting because your motility is so slow, the symptoms may emerge. Like in my case, you know, sometimes the nausea is more heightened than other times when I eat. Sometimes the vomiting becomes more. Sometimes I can put in perhaps a little bit more, and then the next few days, you know, it's like really a tremendous effort to put anything into my mouth. So, that's all I can say is that I understand what you're going through. I can only assume that it's because it's still in you and your motility is so slow. But on a medical, as a means of being a medical expert, I'm certainly not. So I can't give you those answers. But these are some questions that are also very good to pose to your physician. And
can I ask
it would be, yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to get a quick question out there before I know it's getting close to ending. I was wondering if anybody could tell me anything that they may feel about, I'm supposed to take anti-inflammatories. I have arthritis. I'm having a lot of trouble with pills, just in general, but the anti-inflammatories I cannot tolerate whatsoever. And I don't think my doctor gets how severe a reaction I have. And I'm wondering if anybody else has this problem and if anybody's had any success with any type of anti-inflammatory having the gastro.
What type of problems are you having with that?
I get severe cramps and stomach pain, and it seems to set my whole system that I end up not being able to eat for the day. I get, like, severely ill. It starts off with cramping and pain, and then I just feel sick, and I can't keep anything in, and then I have diarrhea, and it's just like it continues. I've lost, like, 7 pounds, and I'm like, oh, I'm not doing this again. But he put me on, like, Protonix for a week.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't seem like it did anything, and I don't. It's like I need to treat the arthritis, but I'm afraid now to take anything he gives me. And I haven't gone back to him yet because I've got to find a way to deal with him, but I don't know what the solution is. And I just didn't know.
May I just suggest two things. Number one is communication with your doctor is key. If your physician isn't understanding, consider, is it the way that you're explaining it to him, or is it his incapability to understand what you're doing? So that's the first thing. The second thing is a lot of people don't realize that the pharmacist is really one of your best friends when you have any medication issues or illnesses. They are qualified to know even more about medicine than other, you know, medical community professionals. So a phone call or a visit to the pharmacist and saying, this is what's happening. Can you explain more? I have gastroparesis. This is the reaction I'm getting. Are there other alternatives that I may be able to suggest to the physician, or is this a normal reaction and what can I do about it? That would be the source that I would say.
Because
a lot of us have that.
I have a pharmacist who's wonderful. You know, it didn't even occur to me to talk to him, and I've done it in the past with other things. Oh, thank you. That's such a good idea.
Yeah, make them your friend and explain exactly, this is the problem I'm having. This is what I have. This is the reaction that I'm getting from this particular medication or type of medication. This is what the doctor gave me for the reflux, the protons, and none of them have been effective. Can you either suggest something for me to recommend to the physician? Are there alternatives? Can you explain why this is happening? And hopefully that physician will be able to give you some great direction. I don't know if anybody else has any of those medication issues. I know Laura has learned to use her little tube there, which really helps out a lot. But
yeah, I was looking at and my intent to sit in my stomach, and then I get really nauseous, so I have to, like, spread them out through the day. And I thought, gee, not that I want the tube, but, gee, that would be kind of nice to just have them go in and not have to deal with this.
I have to tell you, this is Laura. It really is huge because I spent a lot of time, you know, you take your pain meds and your nausea meds and everything else, and they sit in there for a couple of days, and then all of a sudden you're toast.
Yeah,
you're completely wasted because everything just came through after sitting in your stomach for so long and going through your intestines. The walls automatically absorb it, and it works great that way.
Hey, this
the
is truth
really isn't a big deal.
Well, how do you know that?
I'm sorry. I
think we have another caller that wanted to jump in.
Hello?
Oh, maybe not. Okay. Yeah, somebody just asked, how do you what? And then they stopped.
Yeah.
Maybe they had to go. Okay. Does anybody else have any questions or want to bring any other concerns or anything to the meeting today? All right, Laura, I think on that note, I think that we're going to have to close the program because we are running out of time, and I don't want to get totally disconnected from everybody, and I'm sure you don't either. So I would like to just close by saying I want to thank all of you for joining us today, and for those who were willing to share a piece of your life, and for those who are living with gastroparesis, I really am very, very grateful. We realize that traveling your journeys with gastroparesis can be very isolating, and oftentimes you can feel very much alone, and you're struggling with these challenges daily. And I pray that today, as a result of this meeting, the reminder that you are all not alone, and that all of us suffering from gastroparesis, as well as other motility disorders, certainly understand. Remember that AGMD is here to help any way we can. I continue to visit our website, our main website at www.agmd, then there's a hyphen, gimotility.org, for more information and also to keep up to date on our upcoming programs. And remember, we always welcome volunteers. I'd also like to close this meeting, as I always do, on a personal sentiment, that I am just so humbled by your willingness to be here with us today. And it is with a grateful heart that I tell you that all of you, whether you spoke or not, touched my heart. And in my eyes, you are all incredible heroes. And it has been an honor to have you with us today. You remain with me in heart, thought, and prayers always. And from Lauren and I, and thank you to Laura, we'd like to thank you again, and may God bless you all. Take care, and hopefully you'll be with us next month when we meet again. Take care.
Have a great day, everybody.
Bye-bye. Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.